Welcome back to another wonderful weekend of racing on the From the Horses Bay podcast. I'm back from my holiday and I've got the three boys back in the booth. Paddy Power, Ruby Walsh, Matt Chapman. Question number one to Paddy Power, did you miss me?
I'm just looking back at my notes here from last week to see who tipped winners. I never even checked, but I think the presenting is a complete doddle. I mean, it just means you don't have to do any homework whatsoever. You just ask a few questions. You have a general idea of the theme of the day and you set it up with like a one sentence thing. And then you just let the lads talk. And it's like, I mean, I swear to God, I don't know what you get paid. You should be paid half it. It's so easy.
Matt Chapman is presenting a doddle.
Yeah, pretty much. Presenting's a lot easier than guesting. On occasions, though, I think, as I've proven myself in the last week, if you just ask the right question, you can get one or two interesting answers, Patrick.
Okay. I will try and learn from the master, Paddy last week, Matt Chapman every day. And Ruby Walsh, of course, is dabbling in presenting at the moment with Racing TV and ITV and everyone else. Ruby, you're in good form. But Ruby, I want to start with a question to you because on the internet and on Sky Sports Racing, there was an excellent feature with Paddy Brennan. I don't know who hosted it. I just read it. It was a really good piece. And I'm not sure who hosted it. But anyway, Paddy Brennan was asked, has anyone else seen this, lads?
Oh, yes. I saw it.
Did you? Oh, did you read it, Matt? Did you?
I got it out of Paddy.
It was an unbelievably in-depth interview in a very short period of time. Just those pointed, like to the point questions, which create this viral content. Just an unbelievably talented presenter.
What was the difference, Paddy? Is that we didn't have time to re-ask the questions over and over, like you had to the other day with all the boys. But Paddy. I've got something to talk to you about now. Okay. Sometimes you just have to learn. You don't have to try and be brilliant at everything. Just learn. And during this podcast, maybe it would be a time to start.
Okay. I think that's a point at me, PK. Right?
I think so. Yeah. I'll hope it is anyway. Yeah. Okay. In this Sky Sports Racing feature, Paddy Brennan was asked, I think by Matt Chapman,
yeah.
He was asked about the 2000, it was asked about big race rides. And Matt, I believe Paddy said that about the 2009 Betfair Chase, he said Ruby Walsh on Quarter Star, he was obviously riding Imperial Commander, was just unbelievable that day. I learned more from him that day than I've ever learned from any jockey. This is the part that's interesting. We jumped four out and Ruby said to me, "You've got me, Paddy." He was getting in my head with mind games. Ruby Walsh, were you?
No.
Were you being honest?
Being honest, 2009, I struggle to remember 2019. But 2009, yeah, look, of course, different stages, different races, you would say, different things to different people when you're coming off second best because you're trying to change the situation into your favour. So, you know, be it that you could encourage someone to step on the gas a bit early so you could peg them back, or that you go try and get someone to slow down to give you a breather. Of course, if you can manipulate the situation in any way, you're going to try it. But that's sport, isn't it? And yeah, I did say to Paddy Brennan, "You got me." I think I repeated it again at the back of the third last. And then as we sat down to scrap from two out, I don't think I said very much. But that's that's part of sport. I mean,
and I'm assuming, Ruby, if you were going much better than them and you were comfortable, you would have said nothing.
I probably would have, but it would have changed the tone of the conversation.
Yeah.
Some people, and I used to try and talk to the people that didn't like to talk.
Just to try and
distract them.
Yeah.
You know, you got talkers and they'd talk back to you and you'd have a conversation, but that was fine. But it's the people who wouldn't talk. They're the ones you wanted to get talking. Try and distract them. Try and, you know, have a chat. See how they're going.
You were so annoying. And the fact you kept winning as well must have been so annoying. But come here, I want to ask you about one other. I think it was 2004, because I just looked it up on my phone there a second ago. Probably my favorite ever jumps race was the Tingle Creek Moscow Flyer, Zertube, Well Chief, and Moscow Flyer won. Like, coming around the bend, how I remember it is this, and I don't know why I think this, I must have saw it or thought it or read it, and you're probably going to tell me it's not true. But I felt like Barry Geraghty was in front going best of all in Moscow Flyer. And he had a little look, or he looked like he was in trouble for a minute. But I remember that he did that on purpose to try and get you all to go or something while he had plenty more horse under him. Is that accurate?
That was Barry's take on it. Yeah. And everyone rides or reacts differently. But I remember thinking when he looked back going to the pond fence, geez, if he's going that well, he has to fall for us to beat him. That's how I thought it. He looked back thinking I would think the opposite. I can't speak for Timmy. He was on well chief, Timmy Murphy. But I remember thinking, Jesus.
If he has time to be looking back.
Yeah, that's what I took out of it. But look, everyone takes different things out of how people react and what they do or what they choose to do. But yeah, that was my memory of that particular event.
I would just like to say that Ruby hasn't changed at all. Anyone who thinks that these mind games are something of the past should think again. Only last Saturday, two races into Champions Day, what do I get a text saying, that's two for me. The mind games are continuing, trust me. Ruby still wants to be best of the best. He still wants to win everything. And I have to say, when Patrick used the word Ruby is dabbling in broadcasting, you were very, very risky there, Patrick, because the one thing we know about Ruby is when he does something, he doesn't dabble.
Correct. Thanks, is all whetting the appetite. Very, very nice, man.
I have to say, with regard to your talent as a broadcaster, PK, it was an amazing way to introduce the jumps to the podcast. So there you go. I was just going to finish off and say,
what a way to whet the appetite for the jump season, which starts over 16 consecutive weekends, if you listen to various different people. Oh, the start of the jump season is Chelsea. Oh, the start of the jump season is Weatherby. Cheltenham. Anyway, we've got Cheltenham this weekend, and we've got 10 live races on ITV4.
The irony, Patrick, is the jump season actually never stops.
Exactly.
Thanks, PK. Oh, thanks, Matt. At least you said it. As a professional, it's so annoying. Someone says, oh, jump season starts. I'm thinking, it started the day after it finished.
which is a bit nuts. Look, it's kind of one of those things you try and sell. Look, what was their big pull out in the Racing Post this week? Because the jumps is back. Never went away, of course, we know. Anyway, jumps is back, lads, and we've got Cheltenham this weekend, and we're looking forward to part of 10 live races tonight. We've also got a lot of Group 1 racing on the flat, which we'll get to with the Virtue and Futurity at Doncaster, a couple of other races we might look at as well. So let's go straight in, lads. Cheltenham, 1:45, the first live race from the track on ITV4. It is a conditional jockey's handicap hurdle. Sam Arrive or Sam Arrive? I'm going to go with Sam Arrive. Is the favourite, unbeaten 2-for-2 for Paul Nichols. Lorcan Williams will ride 9-4. 6-1 Samba Dancer for Fergal O'Brien. Byzantine Empire is 8-1. 10-1 Ingleby Hollow in from 12s. 10-1 also Small Bad Bob and Sarasota Star. It's 12s bar. This is the first live race from Cheltenham on ITV this season. Matthew Chapman is going to kick us off with the winner.
Well, first of all, I'd like to say I thought the handicaps on Saturday at Cheltenham were like absolute nightmares. If we find winners between us, I think we've done really, really well. I don't want to get into the politics of handicapping, but Sam Arrive obviously can win. But already I think we see the ridiculous rating of some horses. I mean, how can he be rated 133 after two little wins? I was broadcasting the day before this show, and there was a hurdler in France who'd run twice and was already rated 163 after two runs. And I was a three-year-old. I was thinking, gee, I mean, the whole system is completely crackers. Remember, what we're suggesting here is that Honeysuckle, if it gave roughly £40 to Sam Arrive, would struggle. And I suspect Honeysuckle will be about three hurdles in front of Sam Arrive. But I might be wrong. But the whole system for me seems crazy. Perhaps not the time to get onto it because we'd be here all day. Look, Sam Arrive, as I started by saying, can easily win. It's an unbeaten hurdler running for Paul Nichols. But I can't back a horse rated 133 after two starts. So therefore, I've got to back something each way off a lower mark with a lower weight. And the horse I'm going for is Samba Dancer, who's in great form for Fergal O'Brien. Liam Harrison takes off £3, has got up £7 for a couple of wins. Is what I like about this horse is it drops back in trip. And usually at Cheltenham, you get a decent enough gallop. And therefore, I like a strong stare. So I'm going Samba Dancer each way, but I think it's very, very hard.
Mr. Power.
I do agree with everything Matt said. I think we're always chasing the best ever. Like, so every year there has to be the best ever. That's why the rating's going up and up and up. Apart from that, I actually disagree with him on this race, because I do think Sam Arrive, over 2 miles, on good ground, the way he was so impressive at Kempton in April, in, you know, probably a crappy enough race, I'm sure, but like absolutely hosed up that day. And some of the others were running over 2.5. So I just think Sam Arrive, I would expect to have more toe or more pace or whatever you want to call it than the others, and just to be able to go and kick on and probably win handy in the end.
Okay, Mr. Walsh.
What do I think? I think the best part of this race, PK, is probably the name. But I suppose it's a bit hard to say. You'd be worried about the Paul Nicholas's horses, but a good few of them did seem like they needed to run at Chepstow, which was a fortnight ago. I know he's having winners, but they might be not just as hot as they can be at this time of the year in years gone by, and maybe that's more of a plan to have them last a bit longer through the year. And for that reason, I was going with a fitter horse like Matt Chapman with Samba Dancer. And you know, it's even highlighting Matt's point. If you go down to Uncle Henry of Gordon Elliott's, he got beaten in Fairy House when his last start off a mark of 114 in Ireland, which in theoretically you would say he couldn't win off 114. Yet the English handicapper has to put him up £8 to try and keep him level in the UK. So to me, that tells you that the English ratings are between £8 and £10 too high, inflated. And rather than putting up the Irish, if they just brought their own horses back down, it might be a little better off.
I feel a trend that could be developing on the podcast over the course of the winter. Okay, it is the NHS Vaccinating Heroes Conditional Jockeys Handicap Hurdle. Just for those who are wondering what name Ruby was talking about. Okay, thank you very much. Moving on to the 220. This is the handicap chase over 3 miles and a furlong. We've got the favourite for last year's Grand National, Cloth Cap, who tops the weight. He's 5-1 second favourite. Storm Control, who I think is 2 from 3 at the track, is 9-2 for favourite for Kerry Lee. Jersey Bean, 13-2. Manila Bobo, 7-1, as is just your type. Another Irish Raider, go another one for John McConnell, who is good 6 in the Kim Muir. He's 10-1. And the each way mover this week is Gordon Elliott's Definite Plan, 14s from into 9-1. Paddy Perry, go first.
Sometimes you look at trainer in form, right? And you look at their percentage strike rate at the moment. Like Kerry Lee's on 100% strike rate, but that's after just two runners, so 2 from 2. So she's obviously going well. I started there, but then I started looking down through it a bit more, and I kind of settled on Jersey Bean for Oliver Sherwood and Brendan Powell. I just thought loves good ground and has won after a break before. Now that was a couple of breaks ago, but has won after a break before, and also won at Cheltenham last time in April. So I think Jersey Bean likes the course, likes the conditions, has won after a break, ticks plenty of boxes. So I think it's a decent price at 13-2.
Ruby Walsh?
I think it's a very, very competitive race. I would watch it intently because I will be keen to see how Cloth Cap gets on. He's a 9-year-old, so can he really have improved over the summer? Probably not, PK, but you know, he won off 148 in Kelso when he beat Azo. He's up another £8 for that win. He was theoretically well in the Grand National, but he didn't stay the trip. But he's a front-running, good gallop, good jumping. He's a pretty decent horse. Just can he win off 156? I don't know, but I'll be watching him. I don't have a strong opinion of the winner of the race.
Fair enough. Matt Chapman?
And Ruby makes a really good point there, because basically what Ruby is saying in a nutshell is this horse has got to be better than ever first time out. But the only proviso, of course, there is that all the other horses in the race run up to their marks. Otherwise, of course, Cloth Cap doesn't need to be better than ever. And there are plenty of reasons why some of them might, and most of those would concern the ground, because a lot of these would prefer softer ground. I mean, look, this is a race that most of these are gearing up for the Welsh National at Christmas. That's what a lot of these will be doing, including the horse I'm going for each way. I'd hazard a guess Ruby will laugh at my selection, because in many ways he can't win because he needs heavy ground and 50 miles. But he's quite well handicapped now after not a desperate last season, but he didn't run much. And that's Truckers Lodge, who won at Utoxeter, the Midlands National, in heavy ground. Interesting, if you go back in his form, he's got 2 point-to-point wins on good ground, but whether that actually means anything, who knows. But he's quite a well handicapped horse now, Truckers Lodge. And if he is gearing up for the Welsh National, he wouldn't want to be that unfit. And the one thing that we know he does do is stay and jump. He's a big price. It was a race where I wanted to take a chance. Even the old Ginge horse at 25-1 is absolutely chucked in on his best running. And he was fourth in the big race at Newbury that was once the Hennessy, only 4 runs ago. Admittedly, he's got letters next to his name since then. But I think there are candidates in here for popping up at big prices, is really what I'm saying. I'm hoping it will be Truckers Lodge, but it could be any one of a number. It's that kind of race. Look, it's impossible, to be honest, I think.
Well, when you start with "I'm tipping a horse up that can't win," yeah, I can see where you're going there. All right, let's move on to the Masters and Holdings Hurdle. This is an opportunity for last season's juveniles to have another go against their own age, because those, they run out very, very quickly. Tritonic, who was disappointing in the Triumph is the 8-13 favourite off the back of two wins. Remember, went into the Triumph for Alan King. What a season he's had in the flat. 9-4 Stepney Causeway in from 11-4. He's been beating up lower opposition for Dan Harry Skelton, but been back to 11-4 into 9-4. 4-1, I like to move it for Nigel and Sam Twiston Davies. Nigel Twiston Davies started, okay, maybe there isn't a start of a season, but he has been in great form. And then two shots of tequila, 50-1, the outsider. Okay, Ruby, you can go first.
Yeah, look, obviously, the Skeletons went the easier role with Stephanie Causeway last year. She started in March and won at Ascot, but then got well behind Tritonic at Ascot, but then won at Cartmel, Stratford twice, and went to Ayr to round off the end of her season. I don't see why Stephanie Causeway, who's the second favourite, will turn the Ascot form with Tritonic round. And I think Tritonic had two runs in the flat. He looks a better jumper now than he was flat horse, and I think Tritonic will win. And he's no price, he's odds on in a small runner field, but I think it's his for the losing.
Matt Chapman.
I agree with everything Ruby said. Obviously, he was disappointing in the Triumph, but actually, wasn't the Triumph Hurdle disappointing? 8 runners in the Triumph Hurdle. I was just looking back because the Triumph Hurdle was one of the races I used to love as a kid. And one of the races I always remember is a horse called It Dam, who won in 1989 at 66-1 and beat a horse of David Nicholson's, a USA flat horse, Highland Bud. And there were horses in there, Royal Derby and real old favourites, Nomadic Way, etc. 27 runners when It Dam won the Triumph. And I'm sure Ruby Walsh rode in big field Triumphs. I cannot help but think that the Triumph Hurdle... yeah, but I as a viewer... For me, the Triumph Hurdle has been absolutely ruined as a race. I mean, that was a big field, 4-year-old hurdle cavalry charge. Now it's a purist poxy little thing with 8 runners. But anyway, that little rant over. I'm with Ruby on Tritonic.
I'm going to rant back at him, but I completely disagree. And I think
if you want
a 4-year-old cavalry charge, just watch the Fred Winter. And if you want a classier version, watch the Triumph.
Oh, you don't need it. Just have one of them, Ruby. Less is more, Ruby Walsh.
I do agree with you, Matt. I absolutely agree with that theory. But I do think by introducing the Fred Winter, you have made the Triumph a genuine Grade 1 race. And I think that's only fair. And I rode in some of those big field Triumphs, and they were not fun.
So what you're trying to say is the best horse is, you know, the best horse is more likely to win the Triumph than the new Triumph than the old Triumph.
Yeah, definitely.
But I'm not sure the results absolutely bear that out, but I haven't gone through it for the history of the Triumph, but a lot of the top horses did win it. And that's what Cheltenham's about for me. I think if you asked 100 punters, that's what Cheltenham's about. It's not about small field conditions races. It's about huge field, best of the best, all coming together for a right old punch-up. But anyway, let's move on.
Okay. I was asked 14 times by the Paddy Power News team to do a Cheltenham, or no, sorry, not a Cheltenham preview, but a Jumps preview. I think we're ticking it off at this stage. Paddy, who wins the 255?
I've actually gone for I like to move it for, as you said. For
sing
the,
it, Paddy, sing it.
I like to move it, move it. I like to
actually,
move it.
Don't sing it.
As a classical music expert, in fact, somebody with a qualification in classical music, you must be able to appreciate that. So I just thought, obviously, Twiston Davies is local enough to Cheltenham. And as you said, in good form recently, this horse has the benefit of a win a couple of weeks ago to get a season off the mark. So at 4-1, I agree with Ruby with Stephanie Causeway. I think that all those ones, you know, you can take a little bit of a pinch of salt beside his name. And also the Skeletons are a little bit quiet at the moment. So I think maybe Tritonic and I like to move. It might be between the two of them. And I think 4-1 might be too big a gap from 8-13 when he has a bit of race fitness on his side.
Paddy likes to move it. And we are going to move it on to the handicap chase over 2 miles. If you thought Cloth Cap with a rating of 156 was going to be the highest rated handicapper running at Cheltenham on Saturday, you're wrong. Sky Pirate, 159, is going to be lumping top weight. This horse looked a genuine graded performer last year, but he's back in the handicap company, 9-4, 3-1 for Before Midnight. Belargus is 5-1, 6-1 for Leap Away, and 10-1 and Bigger the Rest. Matthew Chapman, is Sky Pirate going to relish the trip? Or, well, we think he's a 2-miler now, don't we?
Yeah, look, everything is right for Sky Pirate to run a big race. He's in exactly the same camp as Cloth Cat for me. You could almost say the same. The only thing is he's got to come back and probably be better than ever if the others run up to the form. And he's also against some horses that are race fit as well. So, but what he brings to the table is experience in big fields at Cheltenham, jumping slickly, all that kind of stuff. And he gives Nick Schofield a big chance and a decent prize, which I feel he's a jockey who does deserve that kind of opportunity from time to time. So I wish him well. I've got to tip something against it just because I think he's too short, Sky Pirate. And I'd rather have a few quid each way on Belagus for Nick Gifford and Niall Houlihan. Horses won two of out of his last three. Both those wins came at Sandown and it also came down there. But he's got left-handed form if you were worried that he might be a sort of white right-handed bully or something like that. And, of course, he gets a lot of weight from Sky Pirate because Sky Pirate's there. I love good horses in handicaps. I think it's one of the joys of the national hunt season and, indeed, the flat season. And I would make a load more of the currently million too many graded races, handicaps, to try and encourage a few good horses to give weight away. And maybe they just wouldn't turn up for the gig, but I like this. I like the fact the Sky Pirate's there, but I want to take him on.
Lovely. Ruby.
Yeah, I think it's a difficult one as well. I mean, what is Sky Pirate? He's definitely 10 pounds behind Shishkin, so therefore you'd have to think he's fairly handicapped at 159, but try and pick one of these to beat him. And if Sky Pirate wins here, he's going to go into the mid-160s and put him even closer to Shishkin. I think he's very, very hard to oppose, and I think he's the most likely winner. But I think that tells you more of what's below him. And I know Matt is tipping Belagus, but And Before Midnight is the second favourite. It's their seasonal debut as well. So fitness-wise, they're probably all in the one camp. And then you're down to Leap Away of Philip Hobbs's, who won at Worcester. But he got beaten by Bativa at Worcester and Oxford in August. Could you really see Sky Pirate getting beat at Worcester in August? No, you couldn't. So, I'm back to Sky Pirate, but not with any confidence.
It's a good, okay. Patrick, just very quickly, a very good point Ruby made there about the fitness side of it. Punters should be very weary of horses at the moment who've got a load of ones next to the name. It's just worth looking at the size of the fields they've been winning against. Like, you're getting a lot of horses got three ones next to the name, but they've beaten like six horses to get those three ones. It's not competitive. The field sizes are tiny. They're pathetic at the moment. And so horses that are rattling up ones and going up the weights might really be undeserving of going up anything because they're hardly beating anything.
We will keep an eye on that forum book. Paddy Power?
I've gone against Sky Pirate for the race fitness reason. I mean, I've gone for Leap Away. It's fully in the knowledge that Leap Away won't beat Sky Pirate or Before Midnight or maybe even Belargus later in the season. But I just think now is a good opportunity to catch them cold. A little bit of race fitness and the stable in form as well, the Hobbs stable. Probably more in form at the moment than he has been for a couple of years, it feels like. So I think Leap Away, I can't say it's a 9-year-old improving or well handicapped or anything, but I just think that little bit of race fitness might be the telling factor.
Okay. The road to the Pretemps begins on Saturday. The Pretemps Network Handicap Hurdle qualifiers, oh, everyone's favourite races. They start, or maybe there's been more during the summer, I don't know, but the 405 is the latest of these qualifiers. And no surprise, Gordon Elliott has got the favourite, a race the Pretemps that he does seem to target. 4-1 favourite Tully Beg, Jordan Gainford, is booked to ride. 140 is his rating, so near the top of the weights. 11-2 for Panic Attack for David Pipe. Shannon Bridge for Dan Skelton. He puts an amateur on board. Mr. Tristan Durrell rides that at 13-2, 7-1 Born Patriot for Peter Fahey, and 15-2 for Holloway, double figure odds the remainder. I go to you, Ruby, for the Pretemps qualifier.
Yeah, it's an interesting one. Tully Beg with a rating of 140, that should get him into the final. So do you want them qualified or do you want them qualified with another penalty? It's an interesting one. So maybe tomorrow will be Tully Beg's day. Panic Attack obviously was ex-Willie Mullins, won a bumper at Market Raisin before, was sold to the Pipe Yard, has had a wind up, and I think trip should suit Panic Attack, even though she's by Camford Cliffs. And the one I was coming down on the side of was Born Patriot, actually. Kevin Sexton rides for Peter Fahey, had a nice run at Navan behind Tully Beg, and I think Born Patriot could have come on for that run. Ran well at the Punchestown Festival behind a surprise package in a Red Mills final. So I think Born Patriot could be the one.
Paddy, very much a Patriot.
Yeah, I thought it's probably, I don't know if it's even a sound theory, but exactly kind of where Ruby was going with Tully Beg, that Gordon Elliott is going to have loads of horses for the pretemps, and that why would he be running it this early in the season when there's plenty of time to unleash them later in the season, and there's plenty of different qualifiers happening. So I thought that maybe Tully Beg is going over there to pick up the prize money. Like, I'm not suggesting that it wouldn't be, but you know, the pretemps qualifiers have an awful reputation for, you know, for looking at the horses behind the winner rather than the winner itself. But I think Tully Beg, maybe we'll see if the money comes or not, but could be primed and ready to go for tomorrow.
Matthew Chapman.
I've gone for my hurdling equivalent of Trucker's Lodge here, and I'm going to be laughed out the houses, I'm sure. To be fair. Remember To Be Fair when he was on a roll in two or three seasons ago? He's now aged 11. He's got absolutely horrific form to his name. But what he has done is come down nearly £20 to when he won at Cheltenham in October of 2019. Of course, he might be totally gone at the game. But if that was the case, you would sort of hope that collections might have retired him. So I'm taking a chance on the handicap rating and the fact he's back at a track he loves in a race that I think is a nightmare. The very well handicapped, but probably far too old, To Be Fair. One point with him is he's got Tom Bellamy on board. And the more I watch Tom Bellamy, who's a tall, tall lad, but the more I watch him, the more I think he's going to have an incredible season, mixing it with Alan King and Emma Lavelle. I don't know whether he's an amazing jockey or not. Ruby would tell you that. But what I do know is that with his firepower and with the ability he's showing, and I think he's tactically astute, he can definitely get the job done. At this stage, Ruby has walked out. So I suspect that his opinion of Tom Bellamy is not very high, to be quite frank.
I was on Twitter the other day, and I'm trying to come up with a couple of ideas for bonus pods over the course of the year, trying to get punters on it. And one person did suggest, you should put it live on YouTube, you know, so we can see you all chat. And I'm like, well, when Ruby does walk out halfway through the pod, you know, it's probably not. Oh, Ruby's back. Oh, very good, Ruby. We were
dogs in the garden.
The dogs are in the garden. Excellent. Good stuff. Okay, lads, that is Cheltenham done. Let's move to the flat world. This must be a rarity. ITV are showing Doncaster, but the first race they're showing is actually the big one. It's the Group 1, the Virtue Maturity, formerly known as the Race Plus Trophy. Let's have a quick scan of the betting. Luxembourg, Fraden O'Brien and Ryan Moore, the monster that won the Beresford, 10-11 from even money, 4-1 Royal Patronage, who's on a lovely winning run for Mark Johnston, 4-1. It's 9-2 for Bayside Boy for Roger Varian, 7-1 Imperial Fighter, Sissoko for Dunnock O'Brien, and Wayne Lorden is 10-1. And McTeague for Jim Bulger, who won this race with a big price horse, isn't he, not too long ago, Mike Sweeney, 33-1, 14-1, and big at the rest. Okay, Matt, you can kick us off.
Okay, so my nap of the day will go in this race. Do you want me to wait to the end of the pod, Patrick, or shall I reveal it now?
Oh, please reveal all. We couldn't wait that long.
Okay, my nap of the day will be an each-way nap, and it will be Imperial Fighter to give David Probert his first ever Group 1 winner. Look, let's face facts. We all know Luxembourg might be in a totally different league to this lot. Aidan O'Brien farms this race, although he's not the leading trainer. Sir Henry Cecil still holds that record, although I suspect most people will think that Aidan O'Brien's won it more than anyone else. But we know Aidan sends a good one. We know all the talk is about Luxembourg. But if there's ever a season to take on an Aidan O'Brien two-year-old, it surely has to be this season, because even if Luxembourg is the best of the bunch, the rest of them haven't proved themselves to be that good. He is yet to win a Group 1 juvenile race. Now, what are the reasons for Imperial Fighter? Well, started off over 7 furlongs at Goodwood and won really well on soft ground. Then went to York for the Acom. Remember, a speed track on good ground, and basically got outspeeded by Royal Patronage, who reopposes, but stayed on really well in the closing stages. Then he went up to a mile at Newmarket behind Caribus, who we've talked about on the pod many times, and Caribus put Imperial Fighter in his place. But Imperial Fighter lived up to his name. He kept fighting and ran right to the line and hung left in the closing stages, otherwise would have been a bit closer. Now, I'm hoping that he hung left because he just wanted a bit of more juice in the ground than he got at Newmarket. Now he's back on soft ground over a mile. And for all those reasons, because Caribus links in Royal Patronage in this race amongst the British runners, for those reasons, I think he's a great each-way bet at around 7-1. if you don't want to lump on Luxembourg, which I don't want to do. So each way, Knapp, Imperial Fighter.
Strong case made by Matthew Chapman for Imperial Fighter each way. Ruby Walsh.
And I'm going for a Joseph O'Brien runner, and I'm going to go each way on Sissoko, who I watched beating Sun King at the Curragh last week. I thought it came home really well. That was over a mile and one, but down to a mile won't inconvenience Sissoko. I just thought it a good each way shout. And I mean, you're looking at the Ballydoyle horses. I mean, Aidan has had two winners from almost 50 runners in the last fortnight. It's only a 4% strike rate, but both of those were two-year-olds. Sussex at Goran the other day and Gloontown in Leopardstown last Saturday. So, you know, two of his two-year-olds have won recently, even if his older horses have been a little out of form.
Okay. No love for Luxembourg, Paddy Power.
A little bit of love for Luxembourg. How do you not like Luxembourg? A proper kind of, what would you call it? What's that word? The worst thing you can say about somebody is harmless. A harmless country altogether, Luxembourg. But I think because Luxembourg won so well...
Would you say Luxembourg is the equivalent of Belgium?
I think it's probably even less. Like, it's even, you know what I mean? It's like Luxembourg is... I have a friend who lives in Luxembourg and he's not at a race, so he won't be listening to this. But I went over to visit him for two weekends and it's like really, really boring. And they spend all the time trying to tell you how great it is. It's got great healthcare and all this kind of stuff. But it's just such shit crack, if you excuse the French.
Is it bigger than Ireland?
It's about the same size as my living room, honestly.
Is it bigger than Ireland?
Anyway, back to the thing. I'm going for Luxembourg anyway because of his eye-taking easy win at the Curragh last month and the fact he's got less miles on the clock than some of the others. Royal Patronage, I think that the Mark Johnson, his percentage stable form is kind of certainly on the downward trajectory at the moment. So I've kind of put a line through him. That's like the second favorite out of there. Hear Matt's point about Imperial Fire. It is a dead eight race for each way, but I think Luxembourg is possibly better than any of these.
Okay, so we finally got a selection with Luxembourg, the big favourite for the First of Futurity. There's a couple of other races at Doncaster on Saturday live on ITV. One of those is the 350. It's a listed sprint over 6 furlongs. Flaming Rib and the Michael Owen Silks is on a winning roll and it's the 13-8 favourite Tom Dascom and Pierre-Louis Jaman. 5-2 Dio Dar, one run, one win. Rafe Beckett and Ryan Moore in the Khaled Abdullah Silks, or the Judmont Silks, I should say. Gold medal, 11-2, 13-2 for Parisiac and double figure odds the remainder. Ruby,
yeah, it's very easy to see why Flaming Rib is the favourite and probably is entitled to a rating of 108. But you're kind of wondering, could one of those three horses just under him in the betting be a little bit different? Diodar, Gold Medal, or Paris? How did you say it, PK?
I went with Parisiac.
Parisiac, yeah, we'll go with Parisiac. And I kind of like the way the Gold Medal did it. I know it was only at Wolverhampton, but I thought it won well. William Buick was obviously chasing the title at the time, but I did see that and thought it was a horse that could step forward.
Paddy?
I actually went for Parisiac, and it was a big price when it won, but it ran really green that day and was all over the shop as well. And that was the first run as well. So you're kind of thinking we'll learn plenty from that and be a little bit better. And I think obviously not from one of the top stables or whatever, but I think Parisiac at 13-2, I think might be overpriced compared to some of the others.
Matthew Chapman?
Very easy. I think Flaming Rib is a horse who will just bang out, make all, and they won't see where he's gone. Flaming Rib, Tom Dascom, and that terrifically named jockey, almost as good as Tony Dobbin, Pierre-Louis Jamin, who literally just jams everywhere he goes.
Here at Paddy Power, we want our gambling to be fun and encourage our customers to bet responsibly. That's why we offer a number of tools to help you stay in control, including the ability to set deposit limits, get reminders after a certain amount of time playing, and to take breaks. For more information, visit responsiblegaming.paddypower.com. 18+, begambleaware.org.
Patrick's disappeared.
He's got a WhatsApp from me, just got a power cut back in his house. Will we just continue? I can take over hosting duties. Let's go. Perfect. Right. Okay. The last race we have to go to at Doncaster is the 4:20. I'll tell you, I'll start, okay, because it's my show now. I went with Razzle here, it's a 5-furlong sprint, so it's a bit of a cavalry charge. You needed a little bit of luck and all that kind of stuff. I think Boundless Power, I thought, wanted very heavy ground. That's the favorite. Joint favorite. Razzle and Boundless Power, but 11-2 joints, I should say. Illusion is 6-1. Dakota Gold, 13-2. And Zargon, 7-1. So Razzle, I went for on a roll, like soft ground, but obviously taking a chance, a bit of a lottery, cavalry charge, and all that kind of stuff. But plenty to like about Razzle. So Matthew, who would you like?
I think we've just proved that Luxembourg is definitely bigger than Ireland. At least it has electricity. Yeah. Anyway, oh dear. 420 at Donny, I go Illusionist. I think this horse has a great chance. A horse who's run up to 6 and 7 furlongs, but then came good in a 19-runner field at York last time. But the key was the ground, I think. Soft ground at York. It's going to be soft at Doncaster. A horse who gets outpaced when there's a lot of juice in the surface and then comes rattling through at the end. And I think Illusionist for Grant Tewer, not a man you necessarily go for on flat sprints, but I think he will come and win again on the ground that he loves.
Okay, Ruby.
I was going for a bigger price, one each way as well. Indian Sounds for Ben Robinson and Paul Migley. I thought ran well in Musselburgh on soft ground only last week behind Russellton Scar. Got beat a nose, handled slow ground. So, yeah, going for Indian Sounds.
Okay, cool. Right, from Doncaster, we're staying on the flat because we're going to Newbury. We've got a couple to look at. The 2 o'clock at Newbury is where we're going next. And that is the Virgin Bet Harris Hill Stakes, or the Harris Hill Stakes. Harris Hills? Harris Hill. You know what I mean. It's the 2 o'clock at Newbury. Okay, Noble Truth's the favourite, 9-4. Who is back? Are you back, PK?
Yeah, you know the way
you're supposed to... in the meter.
You know the way you're supposed to plug in your laptops.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, you ran it. You literally, your laptop ran out of battery.
It just went. Yeah.
That's embarrassing. We did continue, by the way. I took over hosting.
I heard you. It was great. Keep going.
And I love the way then that you plugged your iPad into the wall, but you haven't plugged your microphone back in, so it's like you're sitting in a hollow box.
Yeah. Oh, for God's sake,
PK. Dealing with amateurs, Ruby. Anyway, listen, the 2 o'clock at Newbury. Noble Truth is the favourite, 9-4. Hu Ya Mal for Andrew Balding, 11-4. Light Infantry, 7-2. And Dubai Poet, 6-1, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Ruby, fire away.
I thought a favourite win. Noble Truth, James Doyle for Charlie Appleby. Second to Angel Blue, even at Longchamp in the... Which one was that? Was the Colts one? What's it called?
Jean-Luc Lagardère.
Yeah, and Luc Lagardère, exactly. I thought Noble Truth would do me.
Matt, is that weird that Charlie Appleby's been like in such good form for so long? I mean, that's pretty unusual, isn't it? Like, just for any trainer to keep it going for the entire season. Like,
I don't think it's weird as such, but I do think it suggests that he is possibly the world's number one racehorse trainer at the moment. How you judge that, of course, is a different matter because he might just have amazing horses. But he's certainly training them very well, or his team of staff are training them very well. I remember he has a load of, and they're not always considered the best work riders, are they, ex-jockeys? But, you know, he's got like the likes of Fallon in there, Seb Sanders in there, like proper champions of the sport riding these horses' work. Who knows whether that makes a difference with the top ones, but he's, you know, you could easily make a case that at this moment, and this includes America, Australia, all around the world, Charlie Appleby is the number one world trainer on the flat at the moment. I'm with Ruby in this race, Noble Truth. It'll be very easy to just say, oh, Hu Ya Mal would have won in another stride when they met. But I think Noble Truth actually won that race a little bit more easily than it looked, having kicked for the line before Hu Ya Mal rallied. And I think just held up a bit longer. Noble Truth will take all the beating. He did run really well in France as well. And I think it'll be a good day for Godolphin at Newbury, to be quite frank. So, yeah, I'm with Noble Truth as well. And just with PK disappearing, the irony that you started this pod, Paddy, with whatever you're being paid is at least twice too much and we don't really need you. And he went and we just carried on.
I know. Matt, stop, will you? Seriously. I do. Like, literally today is payday and I'm going to have to check to see if there's any money in the fucking account.
Well, let's just see how much prep you do. Who do you fancy in the 2 o'clock at Newbury, PK, now that you're a guest?
If I was given, now that I'm a guest, this is great, I would just back to get off and double at Newbury. And I've got a feeling Matt Chapman's going to suggest something similar because he did say it was going to be a good day for Charlie Appleby. When we get on to the 2:35, Siskani, who won the old Rowley at Newmarket, as you all well know, looked a proper group horse in that race, and I think he will transfer into group form. And for the best trainer in the world, Matt Chapman? Charlie Appleby, the best trainer in the world, Charlie Appleby, as Matt Chapman just said. So there you go.
Okay, you big show off. You did do homework. That's fine. I went for Light Infantry in this race anyway, just a real kind of lick the finger and hold in the air. The horse he beat, he's ran once, won pretty impressively at Yarmouth, and the horse he beat came out and won next time. No idea how strong the form is, but it has been franked, which is maybe good enough at 7-2. So that's the 2 o'clock on Newbury. Do you want to take back over, PK?
Thank you for the reins. I shall take them. 2:35 is the same time, the stakes, mile and a half. I tell you what, guys, there's an interesting horse in this race called Siskani, who I think he won a good handicap last night. He might be a group horse in the making. Ruby Walsh, is he?
He could possibly be. He's a rating of 111. He's getting £6 from Ilarab because he's a 3-year-old and Ilarab is a 4-year-old. But Ilarab I think sits a fair level. And, you know, Siskani got the penalty for winning that handicap on his last start. He won off 103. We'll see if the handicap was right. And he is actually 111 rated horse. But I think Ilarab sets a good standard, and I'm going to go with him.
Matt Chapman?
I'm not so sure about Ilarab over the trip for myself. I know he's gone further than this, but he's just, his form has tailed off. Look, I was with Siskani on the pod, Ruby. The last time he won, he was favourite, but he was still a nice price, 3-1, and he banged him well. He does look like that group horse who's been, you know, masquerading in handicaps as a group horse, and I think he will win this race easily. I think he is.
What was the one last Saturday in Ascot?
He won at Newmarket, didn't he?
No, it was the one last Saturday, the group horse masquerading in the handicap.
But it was a sunset something in the last race, I said.
Sunday Major or whatever it was.
He looked like a handicapper last week in a handicap.
Yeah, luckily those who'd listened to the pod, though, were all on Aldari, who was another for me, Ruby. So wasn't all bad. Yeah, backed Ashley, smashed in the betting as well. And I was sure that when Patrick picked up that he was going to go from a world top trainer to the world's top broadcaster. I was sure he was going to do that.
I didn't realize Nick Luck was on this podcast. Right, Paddy, what are your thoughts
on that?
Low blow.
To be fair, Nick Luck would be far too expensive for Paddy.
I know.
I actually went for Ilarab as well. And I kind of take Matt's point. I think it's obviously much better than a couple of the results he has there, because he's obviously very well thought of at home and has some really good form in the book as well. And I'm just kind of hoping, like, the Haggis stable, again, is another stable that's been in form for ages and ages and ages. I'm just hoping that he can get Ilarab to finish off his season probably on a bit of a high. And I think this is a good opportunity for him.
Superb. Listen, Matthew Chapman, I'm going to say goodbye to you because you're off to Cheltenham right now. You've given us your nap. Just remind us of your nap again. For those who
It's going to be Imperial Fighter, who is by the Gurkha. You remember the Gurkha fighting to victory in the Sussex Stakes in a light career. I'm going to go Imperial Fighter each way. Probert to bang in his first group one.
Lovely stuff. It's goodbye to Matt Chapman. He's the third person to leave this podcast during the podcast. Ruby did it on purpose. I didn't mean to do it. Paddy, you're going to have to figure out some way. Goodbye to Matt.
See you, Matt.
I want to keep Paddy and Ruby just for the next few minutes because, Ruby, we've got Rachel Blackmore back in the saddle on Saturday at Galway, and William Mullins sends no less than 5 horses to the track. Rachel Blackmore is riding an interesting horse, actually. I didn't tell you I was going to talk about this, but I am now. She rides Balco de Flow, who, of course, was second in the Grand National, runs over hurdles off 136 in the 337. Disco Ram is in that race as well. It's not a bad little race, that one.
No, it's a tidy contest, and great to see Rachel back from breaking her hip and her ankle. Good recovery, and, you know, could do a few more big names back. Hopefully, Paul Towner won't be too much longer. But, look, Balco de Flow, I think a lot of Henry de Bromhead's horses, PK, have been taking a run. It's early in the season. I think a little bit like Paul Nicholls is in the UK. But, look, I mean, championships aren't decided in October. As regards the race, I thought Jive and Jerry, who was third behind Tully Begg at Goran Park in October, he was the interesting one for Jimmy Barco and Cahill Anders.
Okay, right. Let's skip through the Willie Mullins quintet. 120 is the 3-year-old maiden hurdle. Danny rides Lock Isle Lady. Yeah, she was beaten favourite last time.
She was very disappointing, but it was her first run of her life, so I think she would have improved considerably for it, and hopefully she'll be much better tomorrow.
Fair enough. Brian Hayes rides Rabinia in the rated novice chase. Now, got a lump top weight, though.
Yeah, but 2 from 3 over fences. I think unlucky not to be 3 from 3. She fell at the last here at the festival in a graded novice chase. I thought she was travelling really well on that occasion. Won at Listowel when she beat Swiss Bird. Beat She Tops a lot of Tremor. Yeah, I think she's going the right direction. She looks to be in great form. I thought she was hard to oppose.
Oh, lovely. Okay. In the next maiden hurdle, the 302, Danny rides Gammon Original.
Yeah, a bit like Rabinia, fell at the Galway Festival, unseated Paul at the last behind Purple Mountain. Has been in good form since. Not sure would he like really testing ground. That'd be the only question mark. I think Colonel Mustard is a fair mare. She was second behind Echoes in Rain in a Grade 1 at the Punchestown Festival. And this time last year started with a second in a maiden hurdle behind Barry Adam at Down Royal next weekend. So Colonel Mustard's a fair horse. He's a gelding, sorry, not a mare. But, you know, Gammon Original has fitness on his side if he handles the ground.
Okay. We've mentioned the 337. I know where a pink ribbon runs for Brian Hayes in the...
Hasn't run since May and would need to put his best foot forward.
Yeah, you already mentioned you fancy Jive and Jerry in that race. And finally, the one in the bumper, Patrick, back to ride Lovnovo. How did Patrick get on in... Obviously, he didn't get very far in the part of Beecham. Did you talk to him about it after, or have you had a chance?
I did slag them. Connections had booked his flight for him and paid his expenses before he went, because I'd hate to be sending a bill. After what happened out there, two rides and the ball ended up on the floor. Actually, PK, if you want to go back one race, I thought Glenn Quinn Castle would win the 410. Still really well treated compared to his chase mark. Well, it's not really, but it was 99 over fences. It's still running off 92 over hurdles. I thought that won Cosley at Tipperary on his last start. And in the bumper, you said Lenovo disappointed badly at Listowel, but did run really well here behind Level Never Ending at the Galway Festival. And hopefully he can come back to that run. Does seem to be in good form at home.
Gentlemen. That is a helter-skelter look through the weekend. Sorry for dropping off, Paddy. Thanks for it. You pick up the baton again, did you, Paddy? Yeah, just straight away.
We did, yeah. We just kind of had a quick discussion with ourselves. We wait for we just kick on. We just actually kick on.
I reckon kicking on was going to save us about maybe 11, 12 minutes.
Yeah.
Oh, jeez.
Well, Ruby's got a clock on his head, you see.
I know. And it's just ticking with all the cash. That's another minute done. Lovely. Yeah, that's another fiver in the back pocket.
If we were getting paid by the minute, I'd have you doing every podcast.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I'd be doing a lot of work with you, PK.
Well, you know, got to get the most out of you guys. Okay, we've got Matt Chapman's nap. We need your naps on a very busy weekend. I'll give you a chance to kind of go over what you were looking at, Ruby. Paddy, you said to us before the podcast that you've done loads of homework, so you already know your nap.
Yeah, my nap is in the 2:55 at Cheltenham on Saturday against Tritonic. It's I Like to Move It for Nigel Twiston-Davis.
That's a big shout. I must say, that's a big shout, because most people be on the top two in that one, but Paddy napping up the third choice. Ruby?
I'm going to go to Galway tomorrow afternoon, PK, in that 3:27 WB Gavin and Coe handicap hurdle. Actually, I probably should nap Robinny in the 2:27. I think she will win, but I thought Jive and Jerry. I think Jimmy Barco's horse is small yard. Had a good winner in Thurles on Thursday with Influential Lady, who backed up a win in Gorn. And I think Jive and Jerry could be interesting in that 2:6 handicap hurdle.
So is that kind
double
of
nap?
Yeah.
No. I suppose.
A nap and an NB.
How can you sit here and talk about Mullins' horses and not nap one of them? So, we'll nap Robinny and
I'm guessing as to how punters listen to this, but I'd say if Ruby Walsh naps up something not in the Willie Mullins yard, they'd find it more interesting than if he napped up something from... Paddy, am I barking wrong?
100%. Yeah, I mean, I've written down Jive and Jerry.
Then we'll nap Jive and Jerry.
Yeah, I'd be like, geez, Ruby fancies something that's not in the yard. You know, oh, yeah, I tell you, he must have heard something. Okay, gentlemen, enjoy your weekend. It's bank holiday weekend for us, not for Matt. It's great. So who's going where? Paddy, what are you doing? Come on.
I'm actually going to Mount Wolseley on Monday.
Thank God.
For two nights. No, just with the kids, hotel with a pool. Should be nice. Just get away for a couple of nights, get them off the Xbox for a little bit. Having a spooky sleepover with the cousins tonight. Then tomorrow night, what's tomorrow night? Tomorrow night, go to Tato Park tomorrow. Tomorrow night, having a couple of people over for dinner. Sunday, there's a fireworks display in the golf club, going to that. And then Monday off for a couple of days, and then back to the grindstone on Wednesday.
I don't know what the grindstone is. I must ask you that one day. Ruby Walsh?
12's football match tonight. Willie Mullins is in the morning, and under 11's football match at lunchtime. That's about as far as I've gotten, PK.
Okay, very good.
Just take one day at a time.
Good man. I was off for a week last week. I did absolutely nothing. But I did, in honour of Tony Martin and Charles Burns, three quick runs in the new local golf course, got a handicap in 5 days. Happy days. I tell you what, watch out for me in the Captain's Prize next year.
You can't win the Captain's Prize your first year. They'll never stop talking about you, yeah. I think is terrible. It's one of those stupid rules in golf. It's not a rule, but it's one of those stupid things in golf. I think it's insulting to the captain for you not to try. But apparently in your first year in a golf club, you win the Captain's Prize. It's really every toots a little bit.
Okay, right. So I'm handicapping myself for 2 years from now. Exactly. Captain's Prize 2020.
Exactly.
Three. Right, so watch out for that.
You're not Charles Burns or Tony Martin. You are, in fact, Barney Curley.
Oh, geez, that would be amazing.
Yeah, now you're talking. Yeah.
Good, yeah. Oh, that would be incredible. If it was a 2-year plan, yeah, fair enough. I was out with the neighbor and we were going around to get the third round done, and he's mad keen to get me handicapped because I can go out in competition with him. And I was off for a week, so we were out on Seniors Day, which is great. And then he says, right, lads, will you let us play through? I fit right in. And there's four lads, lovely lads, you know, 70-ish. And your man, the neighbor, says to me, right, we'll play through them. And so the four lads had all teed off. And I was sitting there on the tee going, and they're all watching me and going, if I don't outdrive these lads, this is the end of me. Like they're all down the middle, 100 yards. And I was like, oh, come on. Anyway, straight into the trees. Lovely. Great, great. Fantastic news.
Entirely predictable.
Listen, gentlemen, have a wonderful weekend. Thanks very much for listening. We'll be back next weekend. Watch out for it. We'll be looking ahead to a wonderful weekend of racing at Down Royal. The Jumps is back. The Jumps is back next week. Down Royal. Fantastic.
Never went away.
Jump season is back. Thanks for looking after the show, Paddy, while I went to make a cup of tea. Ruby, have a great weekend. Paddy, have a great weekend.
Cheers.
See you all next week.
Good luck, lads.